Now tonight, I want us to look at a woman described for us in the New Testament who is not a very nice woman. She's in fact described as a whore. In fact, she's called the great whore. But before I come to this, I need to do some things by way of introduction. Firstly, the Old and the New Testament are concerned principally with Christ and with the bride of Christ, or the people of God. Now you think about that all the way through. That is its principal concern. Yes, it does mention the world in passing, but not in great detail. It mentions some of the kingdoms of the world, especially in the Old Testament, that had conflict with Israel. But other than that, and even in that, it's principally concerned with God and the people of God. The New Testament, obviously, is even more so, almost exclusively concerned with Christ and his bride and their struggles in this world. And Revelation is no exception to that. Revelation is dealing principally with the Church of Jesus Christ and her enemies, and Christ's enemies. Let me say most forcibly that Revelation, after the first four chapters, is not dealing with the nation of Israel as those teach. It is not. No such thing. The whole of Revelation is dealing with the Church of Jesus Christ, Christ himself, and the consummation of all things. And the second thing I want us to think about, and I've alluded to this before, that in the Bible, harlotry, unless otherwise distinctly in context referring to fleshly harlotry, is usually dealing with spiritual harlotry. That is, when the true people of God go a-whoring, depart from God and commit spiritual fornication. And I'll read a few verses to that end, but in fact, if you get your concordance, look up harlot, fornication, and whore, and whoredom, you will find many, many references in the Old Testament to what it means and the context in which it occurs, because they're all related words. And in Exodus 34, verse 15 and 16, we have an introduction to this. I want to establish the biblical principle here. For us we read from verse 14, "For thou shalt worship no other god, for the Lord, whose name is Jealous, is a jealous God, lest thou make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land, And they go a-whoring after their God and do sacrifice unto their God. And one called thee, and thou eat of the sacrifice. And thou take of their daughters unto thy sons, and their daughters go a-whoring after their God, and make thy sons go a-whoring after their God. So right there, there's a warning sounded to Israel concerning idolatrous worship. And in fact, that is principally what spiritual harlotry is. Deuteronomy 31, 16 to 18, where God tells Moses that when he dies, it won't be long until they go a-whoring away from the true God. Deuteronomy 31, and the Lord appeared in the tabernacle in a pillar of a cloud, and the pillar of the cloud stood over the door of the tabernacle. And the Lord said unto Moses, Behold, thou shalt sleep with thy fathers, and this people shall rise up and go a-whoring after the gods of the strangers of the land, whither they go to be among them, and will forsake me and break my covenant which I have made with them. And so on. And finally, Isaiah 1. Now, as I say, I could have brought many, many more scriptures in order to prove this. Verse 21. How is the faithful city become an harlot? This is Jerusalem. It was full of judgment. Righteousness lodged in it, but now murdereth. Now, both Jeremiah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Hosea, especially deal with the subject of spiritual harlotry. And when we come, therefore, to study this great whore mentioned in Revelation, it must be that sort of spiritual harlotry that it is referring to. In fact, it wouldn't make sense otherwise, as we shall see. Now, further down in that chapter, it identifies this harlot by the term of Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots. And before we look at that in more detail, which I may not be able to do tonight, we need to look at the Old Testament Babylon. Well, there is a connection, but they're not the same. Now, the Old Testament Babylon began with the building of the Tower of Babel, Genesis 11, verse 1 to 9. The whole earth was of one language and one speech. And it came to pass as they journeyed from the east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there, and they said one to another, Go to, let us make bricks, and build them fairly. And they had bricks for stone, and slime had they for mortar. And they said, Go to, let us build us a city and a tower, whose top may reach unto heaven, and let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower that the children of men builded. The Lord said, Behold, the people is one, and they have all one language, and this they begin to do, and now nothing will be restrained from them, which they have imagined to do. Go to, let us go down there and confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. Therefore is the name of it called Babel, because the Lord did there confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth. This was fairly shortly after the flood. God had commanded them to multiply and replenish the earth again. But they had gotten together to build a city and a tower to reach unto heaven. Now, these people were not stupid people. By that I mean they didn't have the notion they could build an edifice high enough to reach the heaven. It was the purpose for which this tower was built. So the Babylonians, Chaldeans, were very much involved in astrology. And this was an observatory of sorts, not only to observe the movement of the planets, which they did do, but also to give a spiritual significance to it. It was the first organized conspiracy against God. Now, prior to the flood, the Bible speaks about the people being just concerned with everyday things, marrying and giving in marriage, buying and selling, and so on and so forth. But the thing is, you never find any mention of idolatry prior to the flood, or even an organized conspiracy against God. You know, people actually coming together with the purpose of setting up another religion, another way to God, and building a city as a power base. Because here is the beginning of what is the Babylonian system. It is political and religious power combined. And in after years, when Babylon became a great power, the ruler of Babylon was not only the ruler of the secular, but he was also the high priest of the Babylonian idolatrous mystery. It was combined in one person. Now in the Hebrew, it was called Babel. Now Babylon comes from Babel, the word Babel. Now in the Hebrew, and you told you this before, it means confusion, but in the Chaldean language it means the gate of God. So you see the difference. This was the first organized rebellion against God, which was for a time frustrated, but afterwards the city was built and it became a very bad influence upon the nation. And so much so that the prophet Isaiah speaks of the universal nature of this conspiracy in Jeremiah verse 7. Babylon hath been a golden cup in the Lord's hand, and made all the earth drunken. The nations have drunken of her wine, therefore the nations are mad, are foolish. This is speaking of the spread of her idolatrous practices to all the nations of the earth. Not only the Bible, but antiquity, heathen antiquity, speaks of the fact that it was from Babylon that all the idolatrous systems arose. And throughout the world you will see the same characteristics of the Babylonian system. So that's why it speaks of them, the nations. She held out her cup to the nations and they had drunk of it, of this her wine, which had caused them to go mad. So the Old Testament Babylon has these characteristics. But funny enough, as far as I can see, she's never termed a whore herself. But Israel played the whore. Because you see, Israel was depicted as being the husband of God, the wife of God. Peter Tatchell would like that one, wouldn't he? The wife of God. God being her husband, of course. And she had, by departing from the true worship of God and involving herself in the idolatrous practices, the prophet depicted her as a whore. Ezekiel in chapter 16 has very strong words to say about it. And I leave you to read that for yourself. But the Old Testament Babylon as a city-state was destroyed by the Medo-Persians. And the prophet Jeremiah said it would never be inhabited again, and it never has been. Though there is, downstream from it, a little place called Babylon, that used to be a railway stop, but it didn't pertain to the original Babylon. And Saddam Hussein, you know, was going to rebuild it. But he didn't succeed, and no one ever will, because God said it will never be inhabited again. But the influence of Babylon lived on, the system, because her idolatrous practices were now spread throughout the nations of the world. In addition, when the Medo-Persians overthrew Babylon, the high priest of the Babylonian mysteries, not the great high priest, the emperor, but the others, fled to Pergamos. And when the Romans captured Pergamos, they took the priests and their whole system to Rome itself. Now it's important to remember that. Because you see, the Roman Caesars, in the process of time, became the same as the emperors of Babylon, in that not only were they the supreme political power, but they were also the supreme religious power. And not only so, but they came to be regarded as semi-divine. And the test for the Christians was whether they would worship the Caesar or not. And of course the true Christians wouldn't, though some of them did compromise, and many were put to death. So not only is this now the advancing of the Babylonian system to Rome Imperial, but there's a bit more added on to it. You see, in the Babylonian situation, it was generally after the emperor died that he was elected to the became part of the pantheon of the gods. But in the case of the Roman Caesars, it was while they were still alive, they came to be regarded as having divine attributes and to be worshipped as such. So now we come to the Babylon of the New Testament. But before she's called Babylon, as we saw there in John chapter 17, the angel takes it upon himself to reveal to John this great power that was to arise, and that she was going to be a great persecutor of the people of God. Now, this is sort of an explanation of where he mentions in Revelation 16:19, the great city was divided into three parts, and the cities of the nations fell, and great Babylon came up in remembrance before God to give unto her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. And then the angel says, come hither, I will show thee the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters. This is an entity that commits spiritual fornication. But the very fact that she's given this designation means it is speaking of an entity that once was true to God. Otherwise it wouldn't be called a great whore. And it tells us that she sits upon many waters. Now, when it talks about sitting, it means sitting on a throne, ruling. And the many waters is explained for us further on in the chapter, for it tells us in verse 15, the waters which thou sawest, where the whore sitteth, are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. This entity was to be universal in its extent. Not localized. Now, in similarity with the Babylon of the Old Testament, it speaks about her as one with whom the kings of the earth committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. And verse 4, it says, having a golden cup in her hand, full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. You see, the very terminology used of the Old Testament Babylon, holding out her cup for the nations to drink of. It's all symbolic. But it symbolizes the drinking of this false religious knowledge and ideas. It talks about the kings of the earth and the people of the earth. Bear that in mind as we get more into this. So he said, he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman. It's a single entity. It's an organization. And this woman is seated upon a scarlet-colored beast, full of the names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. Now, I'm not going to explain those things tonight. I will, God willing, next week. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet colored, and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls. Now, scarlet and purple is the color of rulers. The Roman emperor and the consul, the chief men, they had the scarlet and purple robes. to denote their station in life. But the Roman emperors were not whores in the biblical sense because they never belonged to the true church. This is talking about an organization that's moved away from the truth. But not only so, it spreads its false teachings, its spiritual whoredom to the nations of the world. And he said, upon our forehead was a name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. Now this, like the 666 business, is not a literal thing written on a literal person's forehead. It's speaking in spiritual terms. It's denoting what this four is about. But it uses the word mystery. Now, in the Bible, when it speaks about mystery, it doesn't mean something that's mysterious necessarily. It means something that's unknown. In fact, the Bible speaks in regard to biblical terminology sometimes as mysteries, which are then revealed. So it is something unrevealed, it's not known. And the angel is here describing something that the Apostle John doesn't understand what it's about. And the reason being, it has yet to be made manifest. Though Rome Imperial is in position, that's not the great harlot. Because I repeat, Rome Imperial was not a harlot system in that it did not ever abide in the truth. And this is Babylon the Great. It is some great, tremendous edifice under the aspect of a woman. As we've already seen, it's worldwide in its influence and authority because many waters, many tongues, and many people. It is very powerful why it is called the Great. He started off by saying, calling her the Great Whore. Now he's identifying it more closely. It's Babylon the Great. That is to say, this whore will have the characteristics of the old Babylon. That's why he uses this terminology. Remember I told you, old Babylon had long passed away. But its influence was still felt, even in Rome itself, and especially in Rome itself. And this Babylon was going to be the mother of harlots. She was going to produce other harlots. She was going to seduce others to participate in her harlotry. And abominations are detestable things of the earth. And this we'd have to again understand as in the spiritual sense. For everything that is contrary to God, where God's worship is in the Bible denoted as abomination to God, detestable. Now he tells something else about this woman. I saw the woman drunken with the blood of saints, with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus, and when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. Now that's not that he admired her, but awesome, you know. He was struck with it. So now, in order that we might identify this woman, she would be an organization, a spiritual harlot, a whore, who would persecute the saints of Jesus Christ so that she is said to be drunken with them, with their blood. In other words, she was going to commit wholesale slaughter. And the angel said unto her, unto me, wherefore didst thou marvel? I will tell thee the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carrieth her, which has seven heads and ten horns. Now, I won't go into who the beast is or what the beast is today. It's a bit too complicated to take it at one setting, as it were. But beast power in the Bible, when it uses beast as symbol, it is always of political power or nation state. So that if you turn to Daniel, you see, Scripture interprets itself. Daniel interpreted for the king about an image first and foremost, and then later on he had this vision of these different beasts. Which were to arise. Daniel chapter 7 speaks about it. Says he had a dream upon his bed, four great beasts came up from the sea, the first one from another. The first was a lion that had eagle's wings, second was a bear, third was a leopard. And then the fourth beast was this indescribable beast. There was no animal name given to it. It was diverse from all the others. And they are in order, Babylon. In fact, you can see on the bas relief of, you know, remaining edifices, the winged lion. You see them in any historic, you know, archaeological book you look in, or any temple, any museum. Then you have the bear was the Medo-Persian Empire. The leopard was Alexander. The leopard very swift. And it was to denote the swiftness of the conquering of Alexander. Because he conquered practically the whole known world in very short order. By the age of 31, he was downcast because he had no more lands to conquer that he knew about. He died shortly after. And then there was this diverse beast, which had teeth of iron, etc., etc. Now that, all I agree, was the Roman Empire. And all I want to say to you is, beast authority, beast symbolism, denotes political power, secular power. Not spiritual. And this whore is seated upon a beast. And again, the beast is not given any animal status, name to it, just as with the Daniel and the Roman Empire. It just is called a scarlet-colored beast. She's seated on it. In other words, this whore is supported by political power. But the fact that she's riding on it means she controls it. For apart from some would-be horse people here, who haven't quite got the knack of controlling their horses, normally the person who rides the horse controls the horse. So she's carried along by this political power, this beast. So that now you have the epitome of the Babylonian system here described for us, religion with political power united. Now next week, God willing, I will tell you about the beast which was and is not and yet is, because that's very enigmatic language, but it can be explained. Now, probably lastly tonight, and I think it's enough for tonight, the Bible tells us the location of the center of power for this whore, and indeed the beast that says. And here is the mind that has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sitteth. Now, everybody knows what the seven hills, actually, it's hills there, are mountains, small mountains. Everybody knows, or they ought to know, that there is only one city in the world that is known as the Seven Hill City, and that is Rome. It was known as such in antiquity, and obviously those hills are there today. And he says to John, why do you marvel? And then he says, here's the mind which has wisdom. In other words, this is something that is capable of being understood. Now, we wouldn't understand it if we didn't know that Rome was called the Seven Hill City. But John would have known that, because it was known throughout the ancient world as that. So he'd know immediately what location God, or in this case the angel, was referring to. So you see, it is getting more specific as the revelation unfolds. It's the great whore. She sits upon many waters, rules. She's caused the nations to drink of the wine of her fornication. She pollutes the nations with her whoredom. She's further identified as Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. She will have the characteristics of old Babylon. That is to say, religious and political power combined, but also idolatrous religion. That will be our characteristic. And that she will be seated upon the beast, the political power, denoting that she controls it for her own end. And something I missed out, though I alluded to it earlier on, she would be drunken with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus Christ. She would carry out widespread slaughter of the saints of God. So really, this is just the introduction to this whore, this woman of the Bible, this horrible woman. Well, one final thing, that it wouldn't be till the end of time that she'd be destroyed finally. It was something that was going to last throughout the church age. But God was going to judge it, and he was going to use the very political power that she controlled to judge it. Well, amen, we leave it there for tonight. There's some things for you to think upon carefully. It wouldn't do you any harm to look up some history in regard to these things. If you have a computer, key in the word historicism, and that will give you a pretty good account of what this is all about. I've chosen to deal with the Hoar Quest, which is pretty horrible, and then the second one we'll deal with is the Virgin Bride of Christ, arrayed in white. Quite a contrast. So may God bless his word to our hearts. Amen.